You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
New Zealand researchers reviewed global evidence on health and disability initiatives co-designed with Indigenous and other children and young people from priority social groups. They found a lack of published research, with only 15 studies meeting the researchers' criteria to be included for this review. Just three of these studies defined co-design and almost half inadequately reported ethics procedures. The team says there is an urgent need for formal research to assess how co-designed initiatives affect youth and how they contribute to achieving equity. I spoke to Dr. Paula Toko-King from the University of Otago on the matter. Co-design has been regarded as quite a useful approach towards social groups for Indigenous people and other social groups who may experience inequities. So could you give me a bit of background as to what co-design is?
That's a really good question. So, co-design. The reason that I have done some research into this area is that my background comes. I'm a public health physician, and my interest is in hauora Māori, and so health and well-being of tamariki and rangatahi Māori, Māori children and young people in Aotearoa. So that's kind of where I come from. So I wouldn't say that I am a designer at all or a co-designer. I've just sort of looked at co-design as a field, mainly because over the last, I would say, probably been at the last 5 years, maybe last 5 or 6 years, co-design as a concept has definitely been put forward as kind of a possibly a silver bullet or a way forward for government to address issues for different groups who experience inequities. And of course, Indigenous Māori and Aotearoa experience significant inequities compared to Pākehā. So that has definitely been put forward as a great thing to do. And I suppose when you ask what is co-design, that actually was one of my research questions, and the article that we've published, my colleagues and I have published quite recently last week, about co-design for Indigenous and other children and young people from priority social groups. And our questions were, what is co-design, and what are the processes and practices around it? So I can tell you what people in the literature have said co-design is. But it's a little bit circular, and there's not reasonable to say that there's not a clear definition, and there's not an agreed definition of co-design. So different people might say it's a philosophical approach, an evolving set of methodologies for involving people in the design of services or strategies or environments or policies. And some people might say that it's encompassing a wide range of different practices with driven by different sort of motivations and different ideologies. And some people might say it's too widely used to minimally indicate some form of engagement with people around designing policies and services that would impact upon them. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question greatly, but I think that's because in the literature, co-design isn't very well defined, and some people have also said, you know, there's kind of many people already in the community distrust the term co-design, and can consider the term to be devalued of meaning.
You've reviewed global evidence on these co-designed initiatives, and you may have found that they may not be as efficient. So could you tell me about the findings of your review and why they are significant?
Sure. So I suppose to answer the questions, that I think quite a few people, it wasn't just myself and my colleagues that had these questions, because we could see co-design being used as, talked about a lot. It has been described as a new it word when it comes to government approaches to addressing social issues. So I think, we've had the same questions as everybody else, what is it and how's it been used? But what we specifically looked at was a specific group. So we did focus on Indigenous children and young people, and we also took focus on other children and young people, rainbow youth or takatāwhi, children who have lived experience of disability. And the reason we did that as well was because there isn't really that much literature. So what we found was that there isn't really much written about it. So there isn't much evidence around whether or not co-design is useful for these groups. So that was our first finding. Not much evidence has been written about it, despite the fact that we sort of know it is going on in the community, if that makes sense. So, and another finding was that we only found 15 studies, really, 15 publications about it. And, I mean, you have to sort of bear in mind that there are some limitations around our review of the literature. For example, it was only up to December 2020, so it was sort of a couple of decades of literature, but up to 2020. So obviously we're in 2022 at the moment, so there might have been some more evidence that's come out since then. And we were focusing on the younger group, so you know, children and young people up to the age of 24. So it means that we were very specific in terms of the groups that we were looking at. And that comes from our perspective of being interested in the well-being of Indigenous children and young people. So it's kind of from our area. But also there's a gap in the evidence base around these particular groups as well, so that's why we focused on that. So there might be evidence elsewhere of co-design working for Indigenous peoples and other, but we couldn't find it in the age group that we looked at.
I'm also reading here that there's been some half adequately reported ethics procedures as well, and you know, with an issue like this, where do we go from here? Is this
I think our point for this article was that there's some things that must happen if you're going to continue to do co-design or focus on co-design as a way forward or as a appropriate mechanism by which you undertake work with children and young people. And also groups that experience inequities. So we would say that for starters, you really do need to talk about what you're actually doing in terms of actually telling people what you're doing. What is the co-design that you are doing? So that's always useful. But you also need to, that the articles tended to talk about themselves a lot. We did this, we did use these methods, we did this approach, but they didn't really focus on the participants in their interventions, the participants' experiences of the interventions and what and how the interventions or the processes and practices of the co-design worked for them. So actually asking them in terms of evaluating the co-design processes and practices that were undertaken. So that's one of the key things. And it's also like really appropriate reporting what you're actually doing so that there's some accountability for your activities and being transparent about that, but also focusing on, yes, you know, if you're going to be doing these activities with children and young people in any groups really, not just children and young people, you really need to have an ethical approach and you need to be culturally safe. The other thing that, I mean, I can put forward a definition of co-design based on my broader research in this article, because I think that kind of explains a little bit of what we should be thinking about when we're doing this. So I tend to focus on, I call it ethical co-designing. I sort of talk about it in as a verb, because, and it's kind of definitely informed by the work of co-designers in the field like Carmen Prendeville, and definitely some of the some of the co-designers who are based in Aotearoa as well, they're thinking around ensuring that people are accountable and their processes are ethical and culturally safe. There's definitely designers in Aotearoa who are highlighted that's really important.
That was Dr. Paula Toko-King from the University of Otago speaking about what works in co-designed Indigenous youth programs.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.